Hey Hawkeye fans, this is Chad Lystico along with Mark Emmert for a special edition of the Hawk Central podcast. Mark, obviously, an incredibly newsy 3 days in Iowa football. And I know you've had a busy week up in Minneapolis covering the George Floyd aftermath. Kudos to you for doing all that. But boy, oh boy, I don't even know where to begin. Where do you think we should begin?
Did it begin with James Daniels? I was following a little bit from afar, but that's the first thing I saw, right?
Well, Faith Akakiti on Friday morning, there was a video of Kirk Ferentz on the Scott Van Pelt show that had been largely applauded, tweeted out, and Akakiti, who obviously had his own incident with Iowa City Police in 2016. We don't need to rehash that here, but it ended peacefully. But there was some, racial elements to that. He said to that video, real change has to, Ferentz gets it. Real change has to start with Coach Doyle and the strength program. That kind of kicked off some, we need examples. What do you mean? Is that a compliment to, because that's where it
Oh boy.
starts. And I think you're right. James Daniels around 7 p.m. Friday night, pretty much put an end to that with by saying there are, racial inconsistencies have happened far too long in the program. So yes, I do think it did start with Daniels, and I think the it's clear that the willingness to speak out, maybe it kind of was triggered by Akakiti, but then Daniels really got the ball rolling.
Yeah, obviously he's got a large following, and he got a lot of praise from his from former teammates, like basically saying thanks for speaking out about this. It sounds like there are a lot of people that actually maybe had those thoughts for years, or had wanted to speak out, or thought about speaking out, but hadn't before now. And so I think even Coach Ferentz said today on the call that he really applauds those who did speak out, and I believe he means that. And I think so. Obviously, then you have to start with James Daniels. That's a very courageous thing for him to do. He was always a very thoughtful young man when we talked to him, right? He's already got
Yes,
a,
yes.
I believe he's already got his master's degree. He was drafted in the NFL at age 20. I think he finished college a year early and got a master's degree. He came back here to study. So he's a guy that really is thinking far beyond the football field anyway. And when he speaks, I mean, people should listen. He is really, really, he gets it.
Yeah, and so obviously, I don't know if you've read how many of these accounts, instances, allegations, whatever, but I mean, I've certainly lost count. I mean, I would estimate I've read 60, 70.
Wow.
Probably
Yeah.
that's an estimate. 90%, maybe more from black players. Obviously there's, the racial part of this, can't be missed.
No, I mean that's. I mean, obviously, it's sparked. There's no question. It's sparked by what happened in Minneapolis. I mean, there's going to be a lot of conversations regarding race relations in America now, going forward. Not just in the Iowa football program, but I think among our society as a whole, we're still seeing demonstrations and protests here in Iowa City. They've had 6 straight nights of them. I think they've had 8 straight nights in Des Moines. So it's a nationwide conversation, and I'm sure that's probably what played into this. These two gentlemen coming out now, right? This is the time to talk about it. If not now, when? And I think Kirk Ferentz said it well. I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable for him to hear a lot of this stuff. It's going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people to hear the truth, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't listen. And so that's what he's pledging to do, right? Is to listen and try to make adjustments in his program and maybe even in his coaching philosophy going forward.
Yeah, for that is the yeah, that's definitely kind of the theme from the Ferentz camp. I mean, there are again, I mean these it's eye-opening. I mean Ferentz is not Ferentz is certainly culpable on this. And before we get going too deep into this conversation, I just want to tell our listeners this is kind of a bonus podcast between filings. We're not here on Sunday night to solve the world's problems on this or get to every issue, every story. But we do want to kind of address the bigger points right now. And honestly, Mark, I think the next 2, 3 months at least, I mean, I would think we'll be completely devoted to this part of the Iowa football story.
Yeah, it's a big one. I don't think that's going away anytime soon. And Kirk Ferentz was asked today what the timeline is for this, oh, I guess investigation, is that what we're going to call it, or review or fact-finding effort? And he didn't know. But, I mean, certainly needs to be sooner rather than later. I don't think you can let this linger into the season. I mean, at some point you have to decide, you know, what is Chris Doyle's future here? Are there any other coaches that need to be disciplined or removed? You know, what needs to change? Because when September rolls around, I think it's going to be way too big of a distraction if this has not been addressed.
Yeah, and there are tons and tons of concerns. I honestly don't know where to even begin, but certainly.
Well, let me say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, because you've been working on this a lot harder than I have the last few days. It's been kind of, I'm sure, consuming your work. And I know you've talked to some former players, right?
Yep.
What is your overall feeling about when you heard Kirk Ferentz today? He was the very first question he was asked by Mark Morehouse was, you know, basically, how could this have happened for 21 years on your watch and you didn't know it? And he said that's a fair question, but I don't think he ever answered that question. So I guess, how do you think this did happen? How much do you think Kirk Ferentz knew or didn't, maybe didn't want to know? Or, you know, it just seems coaches are so hands-on and so much loving to be in control. It does seem hard to believe that he just could not have known of this volume of complaints against the program right now, especially against Chris Doyle. I mean, what is your take on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me start by saying players I've talked to on the phone, and obviously those were not conversations that were publishable. It's more for background, but I will I can say right. that you know, they paint a picture of you know, Kirk Ferentz being kind of like the almost untouchable. You just don't see him that much. The kind of like the president type
really?
Thing. And you see Doyle every day. Mm-hmm. So one player put it to me.
Sure.
You know, we don't even see Ferentz for 8 months of the year, you know, and, you know, maybe team meetings, obviously at practice. But it's Doyle's program, really. And he's the one with the hands-on access to these guys every day of their lives. I mean, heck, they were – you know, they have to wear monitors to go to sleep at night. It's very intrusive. It's an intrusive program. I did use one quote in my story that one player, you know, just said it's kind of oppressive. And he said it's not blatant racism. Like they aren't.
Yeah.
I don't think that they realize some of the comments they are making are racist. And there's no doubt the ones that have been reported are, I mean, is classic racism. My sense is they do not understand the coaches, Doyle in particular. And I you know, you want to be fair to the guy, because Ferentz said today, you know, you can't believe everything you see on social media, which that was a little iffy comment in my opinion.
Yeah. I thought so too.
Yeah, that's and my wife was we were just talking about this. You know, she was following my tweets and she was cringing about it too, just because. Boy, to invalidate someone speaking out there, a lot of these black young men are putting their lives on the line by speaking out. I mean, they could be seen as troublemakers by speaking out by you know, people that hire them in the future, people that interview them in the future. I mean, it's a really big deal for these guys to speak out, and to invalidate them in any way is troubling.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. He still does not understand, I think, social media. You can just tell he has a disdain for it that's not going away.
Right.
And I thought the same thing. I kind of flagged that comment as well. Like basically, what he said was he wants to talk to these guys in person because he doesn't trust everything he sees on social media.
Right.
But that's where these people are actually going with their grievances, and that's probably the only outlet they have, right?
Well,
that's their world, right? You're on social media. Like it's not like it's some bad. You know, it's not the boogeyman. It's just the message. The way they can get their message out.
Exactly.
So to me, that was kind of, you're right, discounting the message because of the way it was, you know, the messenger, I guess, because of the way it was put out there. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I hope he has a more open mind about that going forward. I also thought it was telling when he was asked about the Twitter, I guess, lifting the Twitter ban for his current players, and I didn't realize this. Maybe you already knew this. I was just behind the times, but it's only for this situation. Basically, he opened up Twitter so these guys could talk about what he called the national conversation, which right now, which is surrounding Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, the protests we're seeing, nationwide. I thought that maybe he had relaxed his stance.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
I think at some point he's just going to have. I mean, you just can't keep fighting that battle. I just don't understand why he's so opposed to letting his players express themselves that way, the way all their peers are able to do. Right. And if he really, really thinks that they're going to go out there and just and say things that are inappropriate or don't represent the program, then why are you recruiting them? I mean, when you recruit them, you think they're really good young men that are going to represent your program well. So on the other hand, why would you then stifle them in this way? I don't understand the mixed message there personally. I never have. Like, why tell us that you're recruiting high character young men, but you also can't trust them? First of all, as freshmen, they can't speak to the media. Second of all, they can't ever tweet to express themselves that way. Like, what is the message there ultimately?
Yes, you nailed it, and that's a major concern among Black former players that I've talked to. Expression as a young man is such an important thing, and to have that stifled. Obviously, you can argue there are good elements to being a good team player, did you watch The Last Dance? I can't remember if you are a Jordan guy or not. Okay, well,
I'm not a Jordan guy.
It's just a different way of coaching. I mean, Phil Jackson kind of let Dennis Rodman be. The way Dennis Rodman could flourish in basketball was to kind of let him be who he is. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be this way. And I think players are. I mean, the accounts that you see are just Christian Kirksey, great example. Last night, you know, tweeted that it's twice as hard. He said, you know, he was a team leader. He was one of the guys they trusted. Yet it was still twice as hard as a Black man to get through the program than a white man. That's telling. I mean,
that really is. Yeah. Because he was one of the best in terms of the way he represented himself in the program. I mean, there's no question. Yeah. He's one of the all-time great Hawkeyes.
Desmond King, model. I'm told like a model part of the program for 4 years. I mean, the man started 50-plus games but was never fully trusted in the culture by coaches. And I was told the week of the Nebraska game, which everyone knows he was suspended for the first quarter of that game of that 12-0 season for being late to a meeting. I was told there were other guys late to meetings that week and they were white. They were not suspended.
And didn't get punched.
Yeah, that's what I was told. Now, this is a podcast forum. These are not, I can't say that with 100% certainty, but that is what I was told. So,
well, but it's consistent with what we're hearing too. And let's change it to this, because, you know, the drug testing was one thing that keeps being brought up, that a lot of Black players are very adamant that they were singled out, basically racially profiled for those, you know, supposedly random drug tests, and their white teammates were not. And Ferris was asked about that point blank and denied it. But isn't that part of the same pattern where we're treating, or they're possibly treating Black players and white players differently?
Right. He said that he believes they were fair. So it's good. See, some of these things are going to be, I think there's just going to be follow up based on these comments. I mean, I'm glad Kirk Ferentz did this. I thought his opening remarks were on the money. His first 5-7 minutes, very contrite, very heartfelt.
That's what I was going to use as well.
Yeah. And then as it went on, I think it got a little bit more defensive. As you might imagine, I mean, we were asking about his son, which you and I haven't even got to yet. Drug tests, whether, certainly.
Deontay Morrow.
That was brushed
off.
He
didn't want any part of that question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was one, that was a Rob Howe asked that question. Why don't you detail what that question was and where that response was?
Yeah, I don't remember Mr. Morrow.
No, he was in 2008. Yeah.
Yeah. And
but there's a lot of these guys that were here a short time.
He claims that. Yeah, well, that's probably why, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. Yes.
He said that Chris Doyle told him in front of the team, go back to the ghetto, or I'm going to send you back to the ghetto. And he called Chris Doyle out on that. Instead of supporting him, they suspended the player.
Right. For speaking up.
Deontay Moore.
For speaking up, yeah.
For speaking up, right. And creating a, you know, some divisiveness, I guess, or whatever they're worried about. And Farron said he does not remember that, and he said he's never heard Chris Doyle use that phraseology, is what he said.
Yeah, that's troubling.
I'll send you back.
I mean, I'm not going to say troubling, but that could get in trouble.
More than one player said he did, though, right?
Oh, lots of players. Yeah, there's been several.
Yes.
Yeah.
It cannot be.
Including Brandon Simon of New Jersey, who said he grew up in suburban New Jersey. He's black, but he's grew up with two great parents in a suburban New Jersey home, and we're actually pretty wealthy. Mm-hmm. And that's very. I mean, is he making it up? I mean, it just does not add up to stuff up.
Yeah.
Why would
I
you?
I think that's why.
Why would you? Because they're not trying to tear down the program. They're trying to fix it. They're speaking out for change, right? I mean, that's the message.
To help.
I mean, that's what.
And then, I think, to help the current athletes so they don't have to go through what they went through. I think there's no question that their hearts are in the right place. Mm-hmm. And Kirk Ferentz says he's listening, but I'm just wondering how much is he actually hearing? I think the next time he addresses the media, he's got to be more specific about some of these instances. Like, he just can't just say, I don't remember that. That's not good enough.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a very serious allegation for the young man to make. And it's like three parts. It's like, what don't you remember? You do not remember suspending him?
Right.
Because you'd think you'd remember that part of it, right? How do you not remember that? How many guys have you suspended over the course of your career? I just don't. I think you're right. It felt like he was kind of digging in his heels a little bit there as the questions went on. And they were very fair questions, very politely asked. He is always very polite in his responses, but he got very terse. And I just think that's not the look here. He's got to be more open the next time he speaks to the media, number one. Number two, Gary Barta has to get out too and also speak to the media about what his role is going to be. We're here. He's actually one that's going to be leading the investigation into Chris Doyle. And if there is anything involving Brian Ferentz, he would be the one to lead that as well, because he technically is Brian Ferentz's supervisor. So he needs to come out a little bit too. I think we did get the comment from Chris Doyle. Well, let's go back. What did you think about that? Chris Doyle releasing a Twitter comment right before this news conference with his boss was to begin, which I think he obviously, that was not coincidental. He knew that timing of that, right?
Yeah. And he sent that to me, and he may have sent it to others too, but he emailed that to me and my class about 5 minutes before that. Right about when he tweeted it too.
Twitter?
Yeah. So,
Okay.
So yeah, he definitely wanted to get it out there, obviously. He did not have, I don't think he had assistance on this statement, at least not the last paragraph.
No, it did take a turn, didn't it?
It did.
and the second half of the tone was just so different in the second half than the first half. And I don't understand. I understand that he wants to defend himself. He wants to speak. I guess they're not going to afford him that chance. I mean, I wish they would make him available for a press conference.
Well, I mean,
honestly, but I guess they're not.
I mean, if this starts going downhill, I mean, he may do an interview or two. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see where this thing goes. But
there's so many questions.
Yeah, the first three paragraphs. For those that can't see it, I'll read the last paragraph. The first three paragraphs are very they're solid. You know, I'm proud of these guys for speaking out. You know, my job has been to give feedback, and now I'm receiving feedback, and I won't hide from it. He says, I can take it. He's saddened. He can listen. He can grow. Mm-hmm. And then here's the last paragraph. I have been asked to remain silent, but that is impossible for me to do. There have been statements made about my behavior that are not true. I do not claim to be perfect. I have made mistakes, learned lessons, and like every American citizen, can do better. At no time have I ever crossed the line of unethical behavior or bias based upon race. I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. I am confident that a complete review of the body of work over 21 years will speak for itself, and I am trusting the process to respect the rights and experiences of all parties involved. There are countless men of character who are better fathers, husbands, activists, leaders, and contributors to society due to their experience at Iowa football. The record will show this. Chris Doyle.
Yeah, which to me, that last part seems like he's trying to take credit for a lot of that personally.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much he should get for that. But he's asked not to speak out, but I guess he feels like he's being slandered. Is that kind of what you got out of that too?
Well, he said it's impossible for him to remain silent. I assume that means impossible because of the way he's wired.
Right, because of his Yeah, code of conduct or his own ethics or morals, sure.
Yeah, doesn't want to stay silent. But obviously, throughout this whole thing, there's not one apology. Not one. Not one,
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's also very possible that a man of his race and his era doesn't think telling a kid that you're sending him back to the ghetto is racist, even though I think most of us would recognize that is.
Well, yeah.
When he tells a young black man, and maybe in his mind that's not racist. Maybe that's how he's justifying it.
That I just those comments are going to. I predict. Here's a bold prediction, Mark. Saying he did not make racist comments. I think that will trigger more comments, more people to speak out. Because I kind of get the feeling, in fact, I get the strong feeling that a lot of these stories being shared are not the worst of the stories. That is mm-hmm. That is the feeling I have gotten from the guys I've talked to. I will say, even the guys that I've talked to that have been treated, poorly to moderately, as compared to everyone else, they do have a reverence for, in a lot of ways, what the program did for them personally in their character.
I agree.
So I do believe the last part of his statement that there is, a lot of people are thankful for that too. And I think that's why they want to see the bad parts of it get better.
Exactly. Both statements can easily be true. I think we can all understand that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean it has to be this way. It's almost like some of these guys just survived being Iowa football players instead of actually, enjoying the process.
Right.
That's not the way it should be, obviously.
Well, yeah. And it's not one big party for 5 years, obviously.
No.
But,
they know they have to work hard. I think any college athlete realizes that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just really interesting to see, it's almost, I've seen this with other coaches too, where it's almost this old school approach to coaching. It's not in vogue anymore. The current generation doesn't put up with it the way previous ones did, where, I'll let you verbally abuse me and because I think you're trying to make me better. They want to be more collaborative and a little bit more, inclusive, part of the process. I don't think they like being demeaned. That's the word that Kirk Ferentz kept using today. I thought that was telling that when it crosses the mind, it crosses the line where you're demeaning somebody. That's what he wants to put a stamp out on. And I think that's fair. There's really no reason why it has to be that way. Just because, Bobby Knight won 3 championships by being a bully doesn't mean that this generation is going to put up with that kind of stuff anymore. And I think, they need to get on board with that. They need to realize that it's going to hurt them in recruiting if this is the kind of perception of this program going forward.
Yeah, and credit. Let's offer a little bit of credit here. I mean, it seems like Ferentz has taken some okay first steps, decent first steps.
Yep.
It would have been, I think, real problematic to keep Doyle as players report on Monday. I don't know how that would have worked. So obviously, mm-hmm. Raymond Braithwaite, who is black, does take over the strength and conditioning program for the meantime. And then Mike Daniels, former player, has had a terrific NFL career. I believe he's a free agent right now, right?
Yeah.
Will chair this committee of diversity as Ferentz says, the goal is to make the program more inclusive, more welcoming, more safe for all of our black players and all of our players in general. So that is the goal of this committee.
That's a great choice too, Mike Daniels. There's a guy that will, I don't know if you covered him, but he'll tell it like he sees it. He is very, very thoughtful, forceful, and he's not going to mince words. I think they'll get an honest assessment out of Mike Daniels.
Yeah. So that's positive step.
Yep.
I agree. I think the Twitter ban probably should be lifted. I assume that's something they'll discuss. It sounds like it will be
over the summer
completely.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. To let these guys have some expression. And obviously they can still be accountable by that too. It's not like they can just say anything they want,
that's the thing. Yeah.
Taunt Ohio State.
You're accountable to your teammates.
Yeah. So,
yeah, your teammates will police you if you're out there saying things they don't want you to say, or you're spouting off or whatever. I mean, that's the code of the locker room. That's been going on for years. You'll find out if you cross the line. It doesn't need to be a complete ban. Yeah, I agree. And I also think what kind of started all this too, I think wasn't it Ferentz kind of opening up to the possibility of allowing some type of national anthem, protest or
that was Wednesday
demonstration or anything. And I would say that's almost certainly going to happen when that first game rolls around, assuming we're going to have a first game. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine now that does not happen.
Something.
That seems like that's,
yeah,
you know, they're far down the line on that. If they didn't do that now, that would be a question of like, well, why not?
Right.
Who's telling you you can't? So I think that's probably also going to happen, which would be a big step for this program. Because think about that 3 years ago.
True.
You know, we never would have thought that was possible.
Yeah, very good point. So,
and that's what James Daniels tweeted. Wasn't that his original tweet?
Yeah.
If they do allow those guys down, that'll be a big, big shift for this program.
Great point.
He means a positive shift.
Yes.
And I think that's maybe that's what kind of got all this started, was that when he opened up that possibility, now we've got all these people speaking out about a lot of things that maybe need to be rectified in that program. And it's not to say this program is in shambles. I mean, they certainly can thrive and be great here, but they just need to address these issues. And they're not the only program that needs to address these, but certainly this is the most, the one that's kind of gotten national so far. I mean, this was on the national news last night. It was on the crawl, it was on ESPN. There were a couple of national reporters in today's conference call. So this is not, I saw a Connecticut senator tweeted out about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is not going away. It doesn't look good for Iowa right now, but they have a chance to really, really be a leader. That's what I would look at this. They could actually start this conversation, set a tone, show the rest of the country how this can be done, and end up in a better spot nationally as a result of this. There's no question about that. And if they don't see it that way, then they're fooling themselves and they're gonna screw it up.
Yeah, and that's what I would have ideally would have liked to have heard from Kirk Ferentz today.
Yeah.
Something along that lines. I mean, he's you know, he's a smart political guy. I feel like he did miss the mark on a few things.
It's also pretty fresh. He's got a chance. I think, like I said, the next time, I bet he's much more thoughtful and I think he'll be better prepared.
I just hope that he reaches out to the Cedric Boswells of the world, the Marcel Jollies of the world, you know, the guys that were here for a short time some of those guys are speaking really boldly about their poor experiences here. And I hope that he's not just turning to Mike Daniels, white players he trusts,
all the big stars. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
and I wonder if he's talking to James Daniels.
Yeah.
I hope that's one of his first calls.
Yeah. You would hope. You would absolutely hope. And you would hope that James would be part of, whatever committee they have, even if it's on Zoom or whatever. It sounds like Desmond King is willing to do something with this.
Yep.
So that's all good. But I do want to finish here, Mark, with Brian Ferentz, the issue of Brian Ferentz. You and I both asked about why Brian, who was named by Wadley, Johnson, James Daniels, his line coach, as the co-problem in the program. And there were others too, that I mentioned, that lesser names you might not know, but that have mentioned Brian as well. So, we both asked, you know, why Doyle on leave and not Brian. Kirk said, well, what did Kirk say and what was your reaction?
Well, didn't he say that the complaints he's heard about Doyle are far outnumber those of Brian Ferentz? Like there's it's not proportional.
Right.
I think
that's what he was
trying to explain. Yep. And then my follow-up question was, how could he objectively evaluate his own son, and does somebody else need to maybe take over that part of the investigation when it comes to that? And he said, basically, yes, I can be objective, but he also reports directly to Gary Bard, as we know, although we also know that's a really awkward situation, and I really wonder in practice if that actually works out the way they say it does. I mean, it just seems impossible to me to think that Gary Bard steps in, you know, and disciplines Brian Ferentz or talks to him about his job, you know, differently than all the other assistant coaches. They all don't ultimately report to Kirk Ferentz. So it's a very, very dicey situation. I think it always has been. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, he brought it on himself. I mean,
to bring your own son into the program and try to act like it's going to be everything's going to be equal. You know, that's not the way people see that, whether it's true or not. It's just the perception there is troubling. So we'll see. I'm not sure that was a great answer. I do think as more people speak out, if Brian Ferentz becomes named more and more and more, they have to really address that issue. Like, why is he not being, you know, investigated, disciplined, suspended, whatever. And Chris Doyle is.
Yeah, and I think those were fair questions. I wasn't fully satisfied with the responses. Part of the answer was that he's aware of some past issues. The one that Rob Howe mentioned, brought up with Brian Tell and Akram Wadley. That asking if he was going to go rob a bank because he had a face mask on a cold day. Again, that is. A racist remark. It is. It's not something. It just is. And if you don't understand that, you do need to figure that out. It's not one of those things where you maybe recognize it though, if you've not been aware of it as a white man. Right. So,
it's just a strange thing to say if you're trying to build a team and camaraderie and build people up. Like, why would you say that at all?
Right.
You know,
I think he's trying
on your same team, right?
Right.
In fact, he's one of your best players.
Yeah.
And it's a really silly comment to make, generally speaking. And you're right, it's also racist.
Yeah. So, and that kind of gets to where, I guess, my last point of this, maybe this is where the conversation goes next. You mentioned the word demeaning. Actually, during the Ferentz call, and thankfully, Mark Morehouse did bring this up. I didn't even know it. Because he posted it about 4:15. Jack Kallenberger, with a white former white player, older brother of Mark Kallenberger, who was on the team but quit football, completely beaten down for 2 years by the entire. I don't want to say entire staff. That's not fair. By certain coaches on the staff, including defensive coaches, who demeaned his intelligence. I mean, repeatedly, and he has a learning disability. It's really troubling. It's one of the tougher ones I've read in the last 3 days, to be honest.
And he also, I believe, was supporting, what Mr. Simon said, right? Weren't they good friends? I think he came out and said that, what he's been saying is just the tip of the iceberg. He said, I know a lot more stories too that he hasn't been telling here. And he's still got a brother on the team.
Right. And he said,
interesting.
He said they make fun of his younger brother for his intelligence as well. That's a current player, a current starter. It just kind of, I guess where I'm going with this is, Morehouse at the end, hit on something that I think is as big of a problem, if not the biggest problem, as I'm talking to more players about what's going on with the culture, what the culture these guys are talking about. It's a bullying culture for some, not everyone.
Yeah.
If you don't follow the Iowa way, it becomes a bullying culture. If you're not the exact mold of what they want you to be, if you are, a Josie Jewell or a Parker Hesse or, a walk-on that makes it, those are the guys that fit exactly what the Iowa culture is. And that's the feedback I'm getting. I'm not accusing that of every coach on the staff. I'm not accusing that of in every situation, but that is kind of the,
just in general.
And in general, black guys do not fall into that category in general. Because of a number of factors. That's just the reality of it. And I think that's what makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And that's what needs to change.
Yeah.
So we'll see if what they actually do versus what they say.
Yeah. Here, let me read Jack Kallenberger. Again, a white player speaking to the culture. He said, I quit football not because of school. This is at the end of a 5-page statement. I quit football not because of school, but because I was broken, beaten down, bullied, unwanted, and unloved. This is tough. I was stripped. Yeah. I was stripped of every ounce of self-confidence I had. I wouldn't speak in classes out of fear that I was going to be called dumb, because that was my reality for 2 years in the Iowa football building. I was forced to forget about my learning disability, much like the coaches ignored it, and forced to believe that I was a stupid individual. At Iowa, if you don't fit the mold, you're an outcast, and will be treated accordingly by many of the coaches on staff. It is an environment where mistakes can be made, but you better not make any. It is an environment that causes crippling anxiety, something that Manny Rugamba mentioned in his own personal stories as well. Change needs to happen at Iowa.
Wow.
So
yeah, that is powerful. I mean, that's yeah. I mean, you can't say it any better. That was his experience, and that should not happen. So
bottom line is,
I don't know. Where do you
go ahead?
Where do you think this goes next? What do you think happens next?
I think all of us in the media, I personally feel like I did not do a good enough job being aware of some of these issues. I think we need to be more, I'm not calling anyone out. I'm mostly talking about myself, but I think just let this slide. We have to keep them accountable. And if there's inconsistencies, there's gotta be accountability. I'm talking about where this goes from our coverage, I guess, from here. We have to, where does this actually go from here? I think if there's not real change, it's going to blow up in a real hurry. So it's going to have to be real change. And I think this is going to be Kirk Ferentz's, there's either going to be a statue of him out there somewhere.
Right.
Or he's going to end really badly.
Yeah. This is, what do you think, the biggest challenge of his test of his leadership so far?
Well,
in 21 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know now, obviously Rabdo is a big deal. And now, that's being brought up again, as it probably should be.
Yeah.
It's just, I think he's still got a lot more to learn, and I hope that he does. And I hope that he listens to these guys. My words of advice would be to go above and beyond in listening to what these guys say.
Mm-hmm.
Go past lines where maybe you're even comfortable and just see what happens. You're 22 years in. You know what happens. You know what happens when you do what you do. If Iowa goes 5-7 the next three seasons, but their culture is better, I don't know. Do you leave the jersey in a better place? Maybe you actually do. I don't know.
Sure.
They say that all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's
a great point.
I think that this is where he can make, I wrote this earlier this week. This is where he can make, it rides on him. If change is going to happen, it's all on him. Gary Bard is not going to implement it. Frankly, Chris Doyle, I don't think is capable of implementing it at this point in his life.
Yeah. No.
It's got to be Kirk.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. So that's going to be very interesting to watch this next few months. Like you said, this is really, I think they're at a crossroads here.
Yeah. And I think it's like you mentioned, last thing I'll say, I think it's a positive crossroads. I mean, this is, it's
sure can be
the number of people, excuse me, speaking out, being able to speak out and having their voices heard. It's very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Very positive thing for the country, for the Iowa football program.
Yep.
And let's hope that it's not diffused. That's what Tyler Goodson's mother told me. I interviewed her yesterday.
Okay. Yeah.
She wants this to be, she doesn't want these young men around the country that are speaking up. She doesn't want that to go in vain, because they are putting themselves out there to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point, too.
All right. Well, I am on furlough as of 11:59 tonight. Then you take over. You take over for the next week. And then you
back,
go
back in sports.
And then you go back to the bullpen for a week.
Yeah,
so
So
it's going to be kind of a baton thing with me and Mark. And this is kind of our last chance to talk together for weeks on end. So
yeah.
We want to get this to you guys. And any last words, Mark, before we sign off?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground there. I hope that people find this interesting and keep the conversation going and keep reading our stuff.
Yeah, we'll do our best. We'll do our best for you guys and keep this thing going. Thanks for listening, as always. Talk to you later.